It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Bipartisanship might seem like an endangered species lately, but Congress came together for a rare act on conservation.
You know, we like to see that the Land and Water Conservation Fund is the most important conservation program that nobody knows about.
We'll have that story from the Ohio Valley Resource just ahead. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Last week marks the 40th anniversary of the Three Mile Island nuclear accident in central Pennsylvania. The partial meltdown did not lead to large releases of radiation, but it helped turn public opinion away from nuclear energy. In Japan, a far more devastating nuclear disaster occurred 8 years ago this month. State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips traveled to the site of that accident on Japan's east coast and learned how that incident had a similar impact.
Everyone in Japan knows where they were on March 11th, 2011.
We had nothing in our hands. We just ran away.
Hiroshi Miura was working. He's a rice farmer who lived and farmed along the Pacific coast in Fukushima Prefecture. In March 2011, the world's fourth largest earthquake ever measured struck here. It was quickly followed by a devastating tsunami. More than 16,000 people died.
The people who ran to the top of that hill, where there's a shrine, they survived. But the people in the cars, they died.
Miura and his family survived, but he says 68 of his neighbors washed away. The giant waves led to a meltdown at the nearby Daiichi nuclear power plant. Miura was one of about 154,000 people who fled the radioactive fallout. Like a lot of people in Japan today, Miura opposes all nuclear energy.
The age of nuclear power is over.
Today, Miura's fields are covered with solar panels. Like a lot of farmers near the plant, he can make more money using his land as a solar field than growing rice. Nearby, workers are building a seawall to protect the area from future tsunamis. They are also removing contaminated soil, bagging it in white plastic, and stacking it in fields along the nearby highway, where it will remain for decades.
This is a crazy road.
Driving through the mountains with my translator, Hiro Sasso, we're further inland, and there are still signs telling us not to linger. The area contains high levels of radiation.
Whoa!
We pass abandoned homes nestled in red cedar forests. Toys lie scattered among high weeds. Metal gates with warning signs block access to driveways or smaller roads. Digital billboards display how much radiation we're being exposed to. Yuji Onuma and his wife and two sons now live away from the coast, on the other side of the mountains. Onuma used to live in Futaba, about 3 or 4 kilometers from the Daiichi nuclear power plant. But right now, he's in a town that is as far away from any of Japan's 54 nuclear power plants as he can possibly be.
Okay, take off his shoes.
Okay. Onuma shows me a picture of when he was about 12 years old, getting an award from the town mayor. His teacher had asked the kids to come up with a town slogan. In a place where everyone depended on the nearby nuclear plant for work, Onuma's entry won. Atomic power, energy for a bright future, became the slogan on an archway over the town's main street.
I was very proud because this was my first ever award by the town. And all the townspeople told me, you are very great, so I was so proud of that.
Then Onuma shows me another photo. It's a few months after the accident, and no one is left living in the town. This time, he's wearing a protective Tyvek suit and mask. He's standing below the sign, holding up a placard that changes his slogan to Atomic Power, Energy for a Destructive Future.
I made the wrong slogan, but I'm glad that I realized it's wrong before I died.
Although Onuma has regrets about the slogan he created, he fought with town officials about taking down the sign.
I said keep the sign as it is, as a kind of teaching tool. It should remain as part of the bitter memory of the town.
The sign came down, and today, Onuma is committed to renewable energy. He has a new business promoting solar panels, which he has installed on his own house. He wants his young sons, born after the accident, to live in a nuclear-free world.
I'm preparing my children's future, one in which they don't have to rely on nuclear power.
Immediately after the accident, Japan shut down all of its nuclear plants, which had provided 30% of the nation's energy. Natural gas imports increased. Although nuclear power remains unpopular among the Japanese people, the government supports atomic energy. It says it needs nuclear if it's going to cut carbon emissions. Now, reactors at 5 plants have gone back online. But Onuma says he won't stop pushing for renewable energy.
I feel that I'm a living witness to what went wrong. So I myself become the banners and the signs to show that. I am the witness.
The last photo he shows me has him again in a protective Tyvek suit. He stands at the town's main street, where the steel archway that bore his slogan, Atomic Power, Bright Energy Future, is now gone. This time, he holds a placard with a question mark and says, the past cannot be erased. Susan Phillips, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Reporting for this story was made possible with a grant from the International Center for Journalists. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Partly sunny skies today with highs in the 40s and low 50s. Clear tonight with lows in the 20s. And mostly sunny tomorrow with high temperatures in the 50s.
On July 2, 2012, WVBL was granted a license by the Federal Communications Commission to serve the public interest as a public trustee until October 1, 2019, when our license will expire. We must file an application for license renewal with the FCC by June 1, 2019. When filed, a copy of the application will be available for inspection during regular business hours. It contains information concerning the station's performance over the last 7 years. Individuals who wish to advise the FCC of facts relating to our renewal application and to whether WVBL has operated in the public interest should file comments and petitions with the FCC by September 1, 2019. Further information concerning the FCC's broadcast license renewal process is available at 600 Capitol Street, Charleston, West Virginia, 25301, or may be obtained from the FCC, Washington, D.C., 20544, or at www.fcc.gov.
Last month, President Trump signed into law the Natural Resources Management Act, a public lands bill that reauthorized a little-known but important program, the Land and Water Conservation Fund. Millions of dollars from the LWCF have been spent across the Ohio Valley. As Brittany Patterson reports, reauthorization of this program is a rare bipartisan win, and some of the bill's provisions will make long-awaited public lands projects in the region a reality.
The Ohio River Islands National Wildlife Refuge's namesake is apparent the minute you step outside its visitor center in Williamstown, West Virginia.
We're on the back porch here. We have bird feeders and a nice view of the floodplain, the riparian forest, and the back channel of the Ohio River between here and Buckley Island. So Buckley Island is right across the water from us.
Michael Schramm is the Visitor Services Manager at the refuge. Since its founding almost 3 decades ago, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service here has acquired 22 of these river islands, spanning West Virginia, Kentucky, and Pennsylvania, with plans to keep growing.
So one of our agendas on the refuge here is to try and save these islands from eroding.
The islands are important wildlife habitat. Case in point, Shram spots a rafter of wild turkeys across the river on Buckley Island.
So if you look right in front of the barn, there's like a blue barrel. And right above the blue barrel, you can see some black dots on the top of that hill. Those are turkeys, wild turkeys. So it's a flock. This winter, I counted 56 turkeys at one time. So it's a big flock of wild turkeys living on that island.
Over the years, the refuge has been able to expand with the help of millions of dollars from the Land and Water Conservation Fund.
You know, we like to see it, the Land and Water Conservation Fund is the most important conservation program that nobody knows about.
Matt Keller is with the Wilderness Society. Congress created the LWCF, as it's often called, more than 50 years ago, as a way to protect the country's natural areas and ensure Americans could access them. It doesn't rely on tax dollars. Instead, conservation work is funded with revenues from offshore oil and gas drilling. Keller says more than $700 million from the LWCF has been invested across the Ohio Valley, generating millions in economic benefit.
You know, it's a program that's had, you know, pretty positive and dramatic impacts all over the country, you know, including West Virginia and Ohio and Kentucky as well.
Despite its popularity, it hasn't always been functional. But last month, President Trump signed the Natural Resources Management Act into law. The bill permanently reauthorized the program. Here's Keller again.
It's a remarkable moment for conservation of public lands. There haven't been a whole lot of victories and positive things moving forward in the past couple of years, but this is a notable exception.
Congress, he notes, still needs to provide funding for the program. Still, this public lands package had bipartisan support in both the House and Senate. And while the reauthorization of the LWCF is its crowning jewel, the bill did a lot of other things, like increase sportsmen's access to public lands and renew for 7 years the Every Kid Outdoors program, which gives all fourth graders and their families free access to U.S. national parks. More than 100 smaller bills were also added into the final version. Most authorize regionally specific projects, including here in the Ohio Valley.
It's a big deal for us, something we've been working for about 15 years.
Bruce Barkett is the president of the Mill Springs Battlefield Association. The nonprofit has purchased and preserved more than 400 acres of land near Nancy, Kentucky, associated with the 1862 Battle of Mill Springs. The battle was the first major Union victory in the Western Theater, and a big deal at the time. With the passage of the lands package, the once endangered battlefield is now a national monument. It will receive funding and support from the National Park Service. Barkett says this is a huge win.
And this place is on a national stage that will have people come and learn. And, you know, and I think it does help further the understanding of the American Civil War.
The Appalachian Forest Heritage Area is also getting a new name, adding national to its title after years of being stalled by Congress and its efforts to become a national heritage area.
That has taken us a dozen years to get to this point that this winter we were finally designated as Appalachian Forest National Heritage Area.
Phyllis Baxter is the executive director of the nonprofit that manages the diverse 18-county swath of forest highlands in West Virginia and Western Maryland. She says the official National Heritage Area designation increases the resources available to promote the area.
This will get us, branding on National Park Service website. We can do a passport program. There's a lot of things that we could do that we'll have access to now that we didn't have access to before.
Baxter says one hope is that national visibility boosts tourism in some of the rural communities in the heritage area, providing a sustainable source of economic diversification. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Brittany Patterson.
The Ohio Valley Resource is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.